those embarrassing, guilty pleasure type things. That movie, it's called Mom's Night Out, and I think I like that movie a little bit too much, or a little more than I should actually admit, because it's kind of embarrassing. Like, when I was watching it earlier this week, I thought to myself, well, this is great, and then all of a sudden I realized there's a lot of people that realize that I like movies like that, but I love it, and it's hilarious, and there's a lot of funny parts in it, but there's also a lot of truth in it. Maybe more truth than we would care to admit at times. I don't think it would be too much of a stretch of the imagination to have many of us that would be able to relate to the character Allison in that clip. She has her husband, she has her child, and she has all of the parts about life, and her daughter is a beautiful artist, even though she draws her art on the wall, which, if you're a parent, you've gone down that road before. It's kind of horrifying and kind of cute at the same time. But her daughter is this beautiful artist and is a kid, and a kid's not perfect, but it's still her child. Her husband, it's a great husband. He has a job, he's pursuing his dreams, and in this moment of complete honesty, which I think is helpful to do from time to time, in a moment of honesty, she takes an assessment and she dares to share it, to disclose what is on her heart and what's on her mind. And she looks at her husband and says, "You want to know what I've dreamed in life? Want to know what my greatest dream, my greatest aspiration? You want to know what I grew up just dreaming that I would be able to do?" And he says, "What?" And she said, "This. Spent my whole life wanting this. Spent my whole life dreaming about this. I spent my whole life aspiring that someday my life would unfold exactly the way it's unfolding. But yet, it feels like something's missing. How can I have everything I want and still be so incredibly unhappy? Why do I feel as if there's something missing? Why do I feel as if there's something wrong?" Because it's hard. Family, marriage, it's hard. And I think a lot of us wander through life and we try to go out and try to convince everybody else that everything is just okay. It's perfect. It's fine. But inside we wonder, where am I missing it? Why does it feel as if I'm so far off base? Nobody told me it was going to be like this. I can relate to that. That's why I'm so excited about this series that we're starting this week. This new message series that we're going through here at Hope, and we're going to go through it through quite a few weeks, and we're going to look at life, and how do we take faith and incorporate it into all of the different aspects of life. And some of the trickier aspects of life, and we've titled it, there's an app for that, Bringing Faith to Everyday Life. How do we incorporate our faith? How do we incorporate who we are as followers, as believers, as pursuers of Jesus Christ? How do we bring that and apply it to our everyday life? I mean, you think about it. Think about some of the favorite apps that you have. Some of you are like, "I have a flip phone. What's an app?" You have a lot more free time than we do. Because one thing to start off with as an aside, you need to put your phone away sometime. You need to get rid of it. It's helpful. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. It's smart. Smarter than we are sometimes. But it's not worth that much time, is it? But you think about some of those apps, and why do we have those apps? Those apps are used to make our life easier, to make it simpler, to bring the information that we want and bring it to our fingertips so it's so easily accessed. Think about some of the apps that I use the most frequently. I think about my Bible app. I use it all the time. Even at the beginning of our Bible reading, We do that intentionally to say, if you have a phone, open your Bible app to today's reading. Because we have the Word of God that comes along with us. All we have to have is our phone, and it's wonderful. It'll even read out loud to us. Takes away all the work. I can walk around and just have the Bible playing. It's beautiful. I get ready for breakfast in the morning. I just have the Bible playing. It's awesome. I'm a runner, and I run early in the morning. And so the last thing I look at before I go to sleep is my weather app. So I can tell what's the weather going to be like in the morning. Is the what direction is the wind going to be blowing? Or in the winter, do I need to dress like it's going to be really cold or just kind of cold? Check it right away in the morning again to see if anything has changed. I use my newspaper app, the newspapers that I read, because heaven forbid I would have to wait until the paper is actually dropped off in the morning. How sorry life was when we actually had to be patient for something in life. But I need to know the news as it unfolds immediately, because the faster it comes out, the more accurate it is, right? But I have my news apps. I have my sports apps. I have my map apps. Because any time my wife and I drive someplace, we put the address into the app. And even though the voice that is being used is so annoying, we still listen to her. My goodness. And we'll do everything that that voice tells us to do. It helps to make the life that we live easier. And that's what we're talking about today. When we think about family, I can't tell you how much I love my wife and my kids. They're the most important people to me this side of heaven. Every day I'm reminded of how lucky I am to have them in my life. Even when both of our kids got up in the middle of the night last night and they didn't care that I was preaching in the morning. But I got to be honest with you. I thought it was going to be easier. I thought that somehow it was just, it wasn't going to take so much work. But it does. Marriage, family, it's hard. Every time I meet with a couple that's getting ready for their wedding in anticipation of their marriage, one of the things that I say to them, most common, is I tell them, I say, I don't want to scare you, and I don't want to try to convince you from not getting married. But this is going to be the hardest work that you will probably ever do. It's the best work. It is the best work that you will ever do, and it's so incredibly worth it. But if you're not working on your marriage, if you're not working on your family, you're losing on your marriage. You're losing on your family. You need to be intentional. You need to pour into it. And we think about it, and we say, well, where's the app for that? What's the quick fix? There is no quick fix. But how and why and in what ways does our faith play in to our marriage? Well, we have to apply it. Just like the app on your phone, you have to open it up and use it. It's the same way in our families. Our family this summer has done a ton of pool time. We love the pool. One of the things we love the most about the pool is it tires our kids out. So we'll be like, hey, it's time to go to the pool. And they go and they play themselves to exhaustion. They fall asleep on the way home. It's a win. It's a win. Everybody's happy. And our neighbors do the same thing. And they love going to the pool. And so we'll go as a neighborhood at times. And so we'll go there, and it was just a couple weeks ago, and it was in that stretch when it was like 95 degrees with no clouds every day. So we get to the pool, and it was a perfect day to be at the pool, and we line all of the kids up, and we start to bathe them in sunblock. And one of our neighbors, their little boy, he's just under 2 years old, and he's the cutest kid ever, but he's as fair skinned can be. And so when they put sunblock on him, they, like, you literally can't see his skin anymore. They chisel it off when they get home. kid smells like sunscreen more days of his life than he doesn't. And so we're at the pool, they bathe him in sunscreen and sunblock, and then we get home and everybody kind of goes their own way, and then everybody congregates out back into their driveways after dinner. And out walks this little two-year-old. Well, they applied sunscreen, but they misapplied it, and they forgot some spots. And he had racing stripes on him. I mean, he's fine now. But even though they tried their best, sometimes they misapply it. Which is easy to do when we think about this. How do we use faith and how do we use our relationship with Christ? How do we apply it to our lives, to our families? But 3 years ago, my mom and dad, they took a trip to Virginia Beach, and my wife and I and our kids, our son was 2.5 at the time, our daughter was 1. We were going to be able to spend a couple days down with my parents. They had rented a house that was on the beach. You get to literally wake up to the ocean. We were so excited to do it. And the thing that I was the most scared about was the trip there, because we were going to have to bring a 2.5-year-old and a 1-year-old on an airplane. And when the cabin doors close, you're in prison. Like, there's no way you can get out of it. And so it's the time for us to board our flight, and my wife is holding our daughter. I'm holding our son, and you can see everybody's eyes as we get on the plane. And all of a sudden, we're those people. And you never want to be those people. And everybody, you can hear them say, nobody believes in God more than when they think they're going to be sitting next to a toddler on an airplane. And so everybody's praying like, dear God, please don't let this couple sit down next to us. But fortunately, the people we sat next to were unbelievable. They actually entertained our kids. My wife and I took the first naps we had taken forever. And when they told us we had to get off the airplane, we're like, no, we'll just stay here. This is wonderful. This is vacation. The rest is just the cherry on the top. But we got out. The plane ride was great. But in the airport, they didn't nap. And so by the time we got to my parents' house that they were staying in, our kids were overtired. They overstimulated. They could hear the water. Our son, 2.5-year-old, he's bonkers already. And so he's going even more bonkers. And one of my faults as a human being, there's many, but one of them is I'm a little bit regimented when it comes to schedule. I mean, if we say we're going to leave at 8 o'clock in the morning, it's not 8:01, it's not 8:02, it's 8 o'clock. And our kids' bedtime, I mean, our bedtime is bedtime, and that's non-negotiable. So our son is playing in the living room of this house, and he's super excited. He hadn't seen his grandparents for quite a while. And all of a sudden, I look at my watch, and it's time. It's bedtime. And so I look at my son, Trey, and I say, hey, Trey, it's time to go to bed. And of course, he's on vacation. He's like, no, I'm not going to bed. And logical, loving parent would say, okay, let's give it a few minutes. I'm not logical parent. And so rather than saying, okay, buddy, let's wait a couple minutes and then we'll go to bed, you know, just use your 5-minute warning, which is genius for our kids. I was still young in my ways at this point. So I walk over to my son and I said, nope, daddy said it's bedtime. You're going now. And he starts to scream even more. And my wife looks at me like, really? This is the hill that you're going to die on? And I said, yes, if we give him an inch, he's going to take a mile. And so he's just screaming. And I bring him to the bathroom, and any of you who have had screaming kids and you try to brush their teeth, boy, that should be an Olympic event. I mean, that takes agility. His head is jerking, I'm screaming. So heave crying, sobbing, screaming, snot running out of the nose. And he was crying too. It was awful. So I bring him into his bedroom, and I kid you not, minimum 35 minutes later, I mean, he has exhausted himself to sleep. And all of a sudden, I'm like walking out of the bedroom like, victory, it's mine. And I somehow think that, you know, that was the ultimate battle, that I've won the battle, I've won the fight. That means that I'm, and my dad looks at me. He said, you know what, Jeremy? there's nothing more humbling than being a parent or being a spouse. Because you realize that power and control, manipulation and coercion, they just don't work. Then why do we try to do it? I hate to even say it. But if we know that that's, if we can laugh about a silly story, then why do we try to do it so often with our families? With the people that we love the most? I mean, there's nothing more treasured and more valuable than the people who are closest to us. And that's just not just our immediate family either. Because I know for some of you, you hear the idea of family and that immediately brings up hurt in your life. But we're family here too. Brothers and sisters in Christ, bound together by the Spirit of God that's gathered us here. One of the most beautiful parts about this church that I love so much is it's Thursday nights. It's outreach night here at Hope. If you've never been to outreach night, you should come. You should check it out. Alternating weeks, we give out non-perishable food items or gently used clothing. There's a free meal that happens starting at 5 o'clock. Young adult worship happens down in the chapel for people in their 20s and 30s. And then here in the worship center, starting at 6:30, there's something called Celebrate Recovery. And it's for people who have any hurts, habits, or hang-ups, or people who know anybody with hurts, habits, or hang-ups, which is a place we all should hang out from time to time. One of the things I love about that is Melissa Dale, who leads that ministry here at Hope, she talks about the people that she's in community with, and she calls them her forever family. Because in the kingdom of God, we're all going to be united and be brothers and sisters, and that's experienced here at church. So regardless of whether it's the family here or the family that you go home to, it's hard. And that's the gift that Paul gives us in the Bible reading that we heard today from Ephesians chapter 5. Now, when I was looking at this text and when I was looking at this week and I was starting to prepare the message and I looked at the Bible reading, I looked at it and I started to sweat because I'm like, I don't want to talk about that. I mean, wives, submit to your husbands, husbands, all of it. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, they're going to boo me off the front of the church. But that's because so many people have misapplied what Paul writes to the Ephesians. And as we heard earlier, when we misapply something, people tend to get burned. And they use this passage from Paul's letter to the Ephesians. And they use it in a way to bring power, manipulation, coercion, and control, which is exactly the opposite of what Paul's trying to do. So we've got to understand who's Paul writing to. The culture at the time that Paul is writing, at the time that Paul is living, is quite different than the culture that we live in today. It was a very male-dominated society. Only the men had voice. Only the men had the ability to choose what was going to happen. Women and children, they were silent. And so what Paul's writing about and what Paul is telling, what Paul's commanding these early believers of Jesus Christ in Ephesus, what he's telling them is he's saying, you want to know how you make sense of life? You want to know how you get the better life? You want to know how you experience the kingdom of God that is promised for us in eternity but experienced now, here, today, because of Jesus Christ? Let me give you some instructions. All of Ephesians is written about the power of Christ that brings unity. And so Paul is driving this point home, and he gets to the end of chapter 5, and he says, and further, while we're on the subject, let's address the people that are closest to you. Because the way that you've done marriage and the way that you've done family, as followers of Jesus Christ, it has to be different. It can't be the way that it's been before with you. So that's why he starts, and further, as we're going along this track, as we're talking about the gospel of Jesus Christ, here's how we bring faith to our daily life, to our family. He says, submit to one another in reverence to Jesus Christ because of what he's done for you. Because of the way that God has leveled the playing field, because of the way that God has reminded us through the love of Jesus Christ that reached out to all people, because of that, let that be the thing that navigates our relationship. Let that be the thing that allows us to look at one another with love and holds us together. The people that would hear Paul saying this and would read these words, they'd be offended by it. Is he honestly saying that we should be equal? Yeah. Mutually submit to one another. He goes on in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25. Right here, I took it from Eugene Peterson's translation, The Message, that we've been talking about the last few weeks. Paul writes, he continues on, he says, husbands, go all out in your love for your wives, exactly as Christ did for the church, a love marked by giving, not getting. I love that. Husbands, go all out in your love. Let your love be guided by the love that Christ showed for the church, for all who would believe in him. A love that would be marked by giving, not receiving. I mean, what's one of the earliest things that you are taught in life, especially around Christmas time? It's better to than to, then why won't we do that in our lives? Why does that get to be such a difficult thing in our marriages? I'm sorry to bring it up. But if we want to know how we get back to the foundation to build a healthy marriage, a healthy family, we need to be reminded that it's not all about us. It's about a love that's about giving. Paul uses a very specific word in the New Testament when he talks about this kind of love. There are many different words for love that Paul could have used when he's talking about husbands and wives. A lot of different words for love that we might think would be more applicable in this situation. He could have used the word storge. It's a Greek word for love, which is the love that exists, it's a bond love that is experienced in family. He could have said, let this love be the love that you demonstrate to one, but he didn't use the word storge. He could have used the word philios. It's where we get the name Philadelphia, which is the name for brotherly love. He could have said, husbands and wife, have a love that's based on friendship, which is important. And if you are in a family where you've lost the ability to play together, to laugh together, to be goofy and silly together, get that back. Don't take yourself so seriously. Life's too short for that. Be goofy. Roll the windows down. Let your hair blow in the breeze. It's worth it. But Paul doesn't use that word. Paul could have said that the love would be eros love, which is the physical desire, intimacy. which sometimes we think is the most important love that exists in a marriage. But he doesn't use that word either. No, he uses a far deeper word. He uses the word agapeo. Everybody say, no matter what location you're worshiping with, everybody say agapeo. It's God's love. Paul says, let your love be a love of agapeo, an agapeo kind of love. It's the same word that Jesus uses in John chapter 3, verse 16. For God so agapeo'd the world. For God's love for the world was so great that what did he do? He gave everything he had away to those who were in need. That's the kind of love that we're called to give to our spouses, to our children. A love that's not based on what's in it for me. It's a love that protects. It's a love that endures. It's a love that doesn't seek its own will, like Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. It's a love that doesn't rejoice when evil wins, but it's a love that rejoices when the truth wins. Doesn't keep a record of wrong. It's patient. It's kind. It's not envious. It's not boastful. It's not rude. Why? Because it's based on the one who's the recipient of your love. We need to go back here. We know it. We know that this is of ultimate importance. There's a guy by the name of John Mortner, and he, of all things, he's the leader of a group called the Atheists for Christ. Now, atheists are people who don't believe in God. But this John Mortner leads a group of people called the Atheists for Christ because they see that we need to base, even people who don't believe in God, see the teachings of Jesus Christ as being foundational for civilization to exist. John Mortner says that what we're seeing is a generation of people who have strayed away from the teachings of Jesus Christ to which we must return to prevent moral failure in our world. There's a guy by the name of Bob Lewis who wrote some curriculum that exists in a lot of men's ministry. He talks about this love that exists between husbands and wives and parents and children and among people who cherish one another. And he talked about the world that existed about 100 years ago. And yes, there were problems in families that existed at that time. There's been problems in families that have existed throughout all times. Read your Old Testament. You'll see some families that were severely messed up when they took God out of their relationships. But Lewis talks about one of the things that we're missing in our families. So you think about it, at that time, you had parents and children that were spending the best of their time with one another. They didn't go and do all of these other things. Their lives were spent in relationship. When boys got old enough, they would spend their days out on their tractor with their dad or out in the shop with their dad doing the family trade with their fathers. Daughters would work alongside their mother. They got the best of their parents. And I think in the busyness and the chaos of our lives now that we need to ask the question, who or what gets the best of you? Who gets your best time? What gets your best time? We only have 24 hours in a day. No matter how hard we try, we can't extend that. And 7 to 8 of those hours should be spent sleeping. And if they aren't, go home and take a nap. You're tired. You need some sleep. 8 to 9 of those are usually spent working. And if it's more than that, go home. Your career isn't worth that much. I get it. I understand it. Put me at the head of that line that I can sometimes get to the point where I spend way too much time on my work than I should because I love it so much. But I need to be reminded that it can't take precedence over my family. No matter how worthy I think it is, it can never substitute the relationships that God has given to me. And I can't make my work God. Yes, there are going to be seasons in our lives as we work that are going to be crazy. They're going to be chaotic. But I always say we can sprint for 6 weeks, but we can't sprint for 6 months. And if you get to that 6 months, take something off your calendar. Stop working so hard. Start loving really hard. We have 8 hours to sleep. We have 8 hours to work. That gives us 8 hours left. Who gets those hours for you? Your spouse? Your kids? Because they're worth it. Kids want nothing more to know that they're safe, they're secure, and that they're loved, which comes in time. To be there. Jesus gives this incredible message in Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7. It's called the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus ends this incredible teaching. He says, those of you who hear these words of mine and you put them into practice are like the wise builder who builds his life on a firm foundation, that no matter what storms may come, it will never be shaken. It'll never crumble. You can know all of it, but you have to start to put it into practice. You can know the app, you can have the app, but at some point you have to apply it. The Bible tells us that we love because he first loved us. That we love out of an overflow of what he's done for us. We love because a God who loved us enough to enter in, that give his life as a ransom so that our life would be covered, that our life would be complete, that no matter all of the missteps that might take place in our life, we are still God's masterpiece, and there's nothing that you can do, there's nothing that you can say, there's nothing that you can think that would prevent that. That God is the king of our heart, that he has created us as his masterpiece to love us so that we can love the people that surround us. I mean, we need to build the foundation on the love, on the agape love of God that fills us, keeps us, sustains us. Our kids cannot be God for us, no matter how good at t-ball they may be. Don't put that pressure on your kids. Let them be kids. No matter how good at soccer they are, or basketball they are, or at singing they are, or at dance they are, don't let that be God for you. Point them to something that's better than that. Point them to something that lasts longer than that. Don't expect your spouse to be God for you. No matter how much you love them, they can't complete you that way. Only God can. Let God be God. Let God be the keeper and the king of our heart that allows us to find our identity in him, to rest and to be secure so that we can love our families. You can know it. Now you can apply it. It's bringing our faith to everyday life.